we're taking a look at some of the week's top stories in national politics. An effort to override President Trump's veto of a resolution to block his national emergency declaration failed in the House. Lawmakers are reacting to the findings of the Mueller report, and the Senate chose not to take up the Green New Deal in a procedural vote held yesterday. And we want to know what you think about this vote on the Green New Deal. Is this something you want your representative or senators to support? Are lawmakers who oppose the resolution right in saying it's too ambitious, or does Congress need to be thinking big? What policies would you like to see, if any, to slow down climate change and its effects? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Eugene Scott is a reporter for The Fix at The Washington Post, where he covers identity politics. Eugene, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yesterday, as we said, the House failed to overturn President Trump's veto of a resolution to block his national emergency declaration, meaning that the declaration will stay in effect. Does that effectively put the issue to rest, or will we see other action on this?
Well, we're likely going to see other action, especially in terms of it moving towards the courts. This will not be the end of things from the Trump White House or Congress as they seek a resolution regarding what is legal and what is best in terms of responding to the president's ideals for a border wall. We know that there are at least 7 lawsuits right now that have been filed challenging the legality of Trump's emergency declaration and its plan to spend funds on the wall, you know, that have been appropriated by Congress for that purpose. But the dispute over the attempt it's just not going to end anytime soon and could take years to, quite frankly, get to the bottom of.
A lot of issues in recent times have gone on strict party votes. In this case, 13 House Republicans and 12 Senate Republicans voted for the resolution to block his emergency declaration. What are we hearing from those Republicans who are voting against the administration?
Well, I think many people have failed to realize that despite how popular Trump's idea is with his base, that there are people in the Republican Party, which is larger than Trump's base, who push back on the use of these funds set aside for military projects to be diverted to this wall because they don't believe that it is an emergency. And many of these lawmakers, quite frankly, are along the border representing districts in states that have been aware of these issues for far longer than the president has been in politics. And so their pushback is rooted in knowledge and policy and data and context, not as much as in partisanship.
President Trump makes a point of valuing loyalty and coming out against people who he feels are not being loyal to him and his agenda. Has he said anything about those Republicans that voted against him?
Not yet. He hasn't really focused his attention on this matter, I think, knowing that it's not a done deal and that at the end of the day, he may be able to get what he wants. But I think we can expect some type of retaliation from the president as we move towards the 2020 election and some of these lawmakers find themselves having to compete for their seats again if the president latches on to a candidate who he believes will be more consistent in backing his ideals and proposals. I can see him certainly endorsing them in a primary against an incumbent of his own party.
Which we have seen him do in the past.
We have.
And Eugene, do you think that there's any interest in Congress in putting some limits on any president's powers to declare national emergencies? A lot of the opponents to this have said this is not an emergency. There is not an emergency on the border.
I don't know if we have seen any lawmakers say that they want a limit on the number of national emergencies that a president can declare. But there's certainly been a very clear communication coming from both sides of the aisle about what an emergency is and is not. And making that case to Trump has been a priority for quite a few lawmakers, but also to the American public so that they can have an idea of what leadership should be doing in terms of trying to get their agendas passed and supported, and what they should not be doing. And quite a few lawmakers don't think that this approach is the most effective.
So the National Emergency Declaration is staying in place. The border security issue is not going away anytime soon. Eugene, what will you be watching for in next steps from the White House or from Congress?
I'm very interested in seeing how the White House makes its case before the courts, trying to prove that this is, in fact, an emergency, and that these funds need to be diverted from existing projects that have already been allocated for. Because this is such an emergency. I'm also waiting, like most people, to figure out which projects will not be getting their funding immediately or eventually because of this war. And so we can have a better idea of what the president considers this war to be more of an emergency than.
We're talking with Eugene Scott right now. He's a reporter for The Fix at The Washington Post. And we're talking about some of the biggest news stories out of Washington this week. And Eugene, let's move on to the Green New Deal vote. First, can you summarize for us what is in this Green New Deal? I know there are a lot of parts, but in general, what does it want to do?
Well, what the Green New Deal wants to do is to reduce America's dependence on fossil fuels in response to climate change. And there, what that entails is pretty broad, depending on who you're listening to. There's certainly desires to get guaranteed job security for all Americans and green-friendly employment. And just also to respond to our greenhouse gas emissions and get it to zero while guaranteeing Americans also high quality health care. And so it was pretty far reaching in its ambitions, also trying to encourage Americans to use transportation differently in using vehicles, should we say, and trains and planes that are better for the environment. And so the details of it are not as clear as many supporters or even critics would like. And that perhaps is set it up for a lot of criticism from those on the right.
So Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell held a procedural vote yesterday on the Green New Deal. It didn't pass. McConnell is far from a supporter of this proposal. So what was his aim in having the Senate vote on it?
Well, initially, I think the perception was that he wanted to show just how divided the Democratic Party is on the matter. We know that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been in the forefront of getting the Green Deal passed and supported by the public. But the reality is Democrats in the party who are more conservative have not been as enthusiastic about this new deal as presented. And I think McConnell wanted to expose the left as not being as united on this matter as maybe some would hope, in part because quite a bit of attention in this current political climate has been on just how divided the GOP is on a host of policy issues, including climate change.
And how did Democratic senators respond to this?
Well, some, about four, I believe, voted along with Republicans opposing the Green New Deal. But the majority of Democrats just voted present, did not want to make any clear stance, including some who we know have come out in support of the Green New Deal, you know, on Twitter or in stump speeches or elsewhere. But they certainly want to work within their own caucus to get something that is more palatable to the American people before being exposed by the GOP as backing something that some Americans Americans find a bit preposterous in some situations and just unrealistic in others.
Let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234. And James in Scale Mounds is on the line. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good. What would you like to say?
Well, I'd just like to bring up, I know they talk about there's a lot of difference in the political will for the thing like the Green New Deal, but I wish that both parties would just address the science of the fact that achieving anything close to what it was presenting is basically scientifically impossible unless by some miracle the world at whole somehow comes up with technology that can be implemented in such a fast fashion. We all depend on fossil fuels to a huge extent to put our way of life the way it is over 150 years ago, and I don't know if people just don't realize it or just don't care to realize it, but it's not going to be nearly as easy as politics being on the same page.
All right, thanks for that call, James, and let's go right to Fawn in Madison. Hi, Fawn. I don't think we have Fawn. Well,
hi.
Hi.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I believe that the Green New Deal ought to be absolutely discussed, promoted, and receive the full support by all the Democrats and by those Republicans who understand what is up. And many of them have actually come to see that there are benefits to it, and that there are so many parts of it that will benefit their constituents. The majority of people support the Green New Deal when they understand what is in it. It supports jobs. It will be great for jobs in the United States jobs that cannot be sent overseas, that will not expire, they're not vulnerable to the scarcity of resources such as fossil fuels, and that will absolutely benefit not only our economy and the stability of our economy now that we have the technology to make this happen, and that solar and renewables are actually becoming cheaper than fossil fuels, as we're seeing, but also that it will be instrumental to the survival of us as a species.
Thanks for that call, Fawn. So a couple of different perspectives there, Eugene.
Absolutely. I think what Democrats on the left and the more far left of the party are hoping to do in reference to the first caller is to just be as ambitious as possible, knowing that the way lawmaking works is that it's not likely that they will get everything that they want passed, and so you just shoot for the sky, for the moon, with the hope that you can find a middle ground that you are more acceptable, that you find more acceptable and more pleased with implementing. And so it is worth noting, though, to the second caller's point, that we have seen a few Republican lawmakers come out and admit, including Mitch McConnell, that they do believe that the science supports that climate change is real, that humans are playing a factor into creating that, and that some changes need to be made.
Following the vote in the Senate, Wisconsin Republican Representative Sean Duffy suggested that the Green New Deal was more of an elite concern. Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a co-sponsor of the Green New Deal, had this to say in response.
This is about our constituents and all of our lives. Iowa, Nebraska, broad swaths of the Midwest are drowning right now, underwater. Farms, towns that will never be recovered and never come back. And we're here, and people are more concerned about helping oil companies than helping their own families? I don't think so. I don't think so.
So has there been a lot of discussion in Congress, Eugene, about who actually ends up bearing the heaviest burden of a changing climate?
Not in terms of, big major cities on the coast versus the heartland. There's been, I think, a push among those on the left, as you just saw from the representative, to communicate to the American people who are not on the coast of how climate change affects their daily lives, and how this is something that is not just benefiting elites in major cities, but that we do see issues related to natural disasters devastating communities in what are generally called the red states or the flyover states that can be changed with some policy initiatives and redirecting, resources, decisions made about how we consume energy and how we use transportation, that could lead to some change. And so it's a national concern, and that's why you see even lawmakers from states that are not on the coast finally acknowledging that.
We're talking with Eugene Scott right now, a reporter for The Fix at The Washington Post, and we're breaking down some of the big news stories from the nation's capital this week. And there's still time for you to weigh in at 800-642-1234. Do you support the New Deal? Green New Deal. Why or why not? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation after a short break here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're continuing our conversation with Eugene Scott of The Washington Post, looking at a few of the week's big stories in national politics. And Eugene, I want to make sure that we touch on the aftermath of the Mueller report being finished and submitted. It was after about 2 years of watching, waiting, and reporting. What has the mood been in Washington since that news came down?
Well, it obviously has been divided among party lines for the most part. Democrats have been very vocal, making it clear to people that we have not seen the Mueller report. We have seen Bill Barr's report of the Mueller report. And there's definitely a desire, of course, to make that public, at the very least to Congress, if not to the American people as a whole. And there's a need for liberal lawmakers, according to them, to get a better idea of why Mueller decided not to conclude that the president had, in fact, obstructed justice and what he wanted to be done with his decision not to make a decision. Those on the right, especially those most supportive of the president, have interpreted the report as a vindication for the president that he, in fact, or his campaign, should we say, did not collude with the Russian government to win the 2016 election. And so they certainly are hoping to, campaign on that with the idea of attacking Democrats and even the media for focusing so much on this story that, quite frankly, has cast a cloud over his victory for more than 2 years.
Representative Adam Schiff, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, has been one of the most vocal proponents of making the report public. Here he is speaking on ABC this week.
And I think, frankly, the country owes Bob Mueller a debt of gratitude for conducting the investigation as professionally as he has. So I have trust in his prosecutorial judgment, but that doesn't mean, of course, that there isn't compelling and incriminating evidence that should be shared with the American people.
Schiff is suggesting that there's still incriminating information to be seen. Are we hearing that from other Democrats, or is he something of an outlier at this point?
Well, he's certainly not an outlier. He's definitely received the support of other Democrats who would like to see other investigations into individuals affiliated with Trump and organizations like the Trump Corporation continue. I think that will be the norm until the Mueller report becomes public, because there's a belief that there could be information in the report that will support Schiff's view of what happened between the Trump campaign and Russia.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi has already come out against the idea of impeaching the president. Will the Mueller report effectively end talk of impeachment from other Democrats in Congress?
Probably not. I think it's really important for folks to remember that the president was deemed unfit for reasons, quite frankly, other than the belief that he or his team may have actively colluded with the Russian government. And I think we have a piece in today's Washington Post written by George Conway, the husband of the White House counselor Kellyanne Conway, talking about how difficult it is to actually define and determine collusion in and of itself. And so it's possible to many people on both sides of the aisle that there was some inappropriate contact between the campaign and those in Russia hoping to interfere in the election of our president in 2016. And that's, in fact, why you had so many people in the campaign plead guilty to lying very often about their interaction with Russians. But beyond that, the unfitness of the president based on his policies and his worldview, his temperament and behavior and other actions have made many among the base believe that he is unfit for the office and perhaps will want to look in ways to remove him from the office.
Well, Eugene, thank you so much for joining us today and bringing us up to speed on all of this news.
Very glad to be here.
Eugene Scott is a reporter for The Fix at The Washington Post, where he covers identity politics. He was with us for our weekly look at some of the top ongoing stories in Congress and the White House. And we will be hoping to cover the media response to the Mueller investigation and report, talking about what expectations were set up and whether the media was responsible in its coverage. You can still send us your thoughts on what we've been discussing today. What's your reaction to the Senate voting down the Green New Deal yesterday? What kind of legislation would you like to see on climate change, if any? And now that the Mueller report is finished, what issues do you want to see lawmakers turn their attention to? You can let us know by emailing ideas@WPR.org. You can also send us a message on Twitter. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR, and you can also comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We always want to hear what you'd like to hear about. Coming up later in the show, we are going to be asking you for ideas of great back roads around Wisconsin that you can take road trips on this spring. If you're itching to get out on the road but don't necessarily need a destination, it'll be a great conversation for places to go and sights to see as you meander around the back roads of Wisconsin. That's coming up a little later on the show, right here on Central Time.